Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Casting there until we could have done a whole episode, so we might as well just hit the record button and
Could have done that episode.
Oh boy. You know, there's a lot of things we talk about that the ideas need to sort of flesh out a little bit, and it isn't because what we're saying is controversial, somehow trying to like dumb it down to make it palatable. It's just when you're trying to work towards an idea, yeah, sometimes it can be a little rough. But
you know, I would laugh my ass off if record had been hitting the whole time and it was streaming, going to the cloud.
God, yeah,
you laugh.
Oh, I mean, it's nothing we said is offensive, nothing we said is ill will to anybody. It's just the conversation itself is.
Well, I mean, I made some exact quotes.
You did. You did do some exact quotes.
Popular.
It would not be popular. But again, you're just recounting experiences, and so you have to understand that. You know, that's what it is.
New
shit has come to light. Well, before we dive into this, as always, to our listeners throughout the world. And most notably from France, vive la France, bonjour, bonsoir, comment ça va? There's been a huge download from that part of the world, so we certainly appreciate that. And as always, everywhere else in the world and here in America as well. So if you have a chance, head over to modstate.com for more opinion pieces and stuff like that. You doing all right today, my friend?
Yeah, man, it's always much better when I get together with you. And yes, hail to the motherland, vive la France. Thank you for your attentiveness. Thank you to our listeners from Repubblica Italiana, Deutschland, Ghana, and of course, where many of your relatives live, New Zealand.
G'day. Oh, no, sorry, that's Australia. Oh, my God.
That's one of them.
Bonjour. Bonjour. No.
After all the shtick we've given them, or excuse me, I've given them, thank you to our listeners in seven metropoli in that other country in California.
That other country. Yes. Well, God. All right. Gosh. You know, you said it best. You know, it always seems like a long time in between our recording. Because there's just so much stuff that goes on. And
because I miss you.
Aw. Well, you know, what was it? I was going to pull this up. Before we move on, we did get some comments, and I think I wanted a chance to...
Oh, God. Well, one of them was positive. One of them was kind of pointed. I'm not sure who it was more pointed at.
Yeah.
Called me out apparently for a lack of intestinal fortitude, so shall we say.
Yeah, Philip D out there commenting away, calling John out. I think that's who he was calling out. Stop apologizing and dig in, for God's sakes. Yeah, you know what? We just apologize too much. You know, Philip, I don't know if you were pointing that at me or not, but you're right. I'm going to stop apologizing.
That's the same commenter before who commented regarding the police, who's in OPD.
Oh.
So I appreciate the continued feedback and following us by all means, but a little ambiguous. I think it might have been pointed at me. I'm not really sure, but again, thanks for the feedback.
As always.
We miss you.
All right. Well, where were we in precast? I mean, there's been a number of things, and so what I will say before we get into this, and I can concede this before we have this discussion.
We were talking about Biden Trump, as you recall.
We were. And, you know, I will say right off the bat that the mainstream, so that comment that we will talk about with Joe Biden was very much buried in the middle section of the first page on CNN. I bet you I could go to HuffPo and I wouldn't see it anywhere, because I think now that there are no more contenders for the Democratic nomination, you probably won't see a HuffPo making any comments about this. In fact, let me just scroll through here.
Well, while you're scrolling through there in Salon and Slate, The Nation, The New Republic, let me just say at the same time, on right-leaning publications, you're not going to see, I mean, now, granted, you and I tend to swap. You go farther right in your research, myself farther left, to kind of perfectly mediate our centrism. But I don't feel like you're going to see a whole lot of publications on the right. I don't think you're going to see the Federalist saying, hey, isn't there a better nominee than Donald Trump here, X, Y, and Z? So in the interest of fairness, sure. Like Politico was, I think, 2.5 pages down. The Biden story, that is, but in the interest of fairness.
So then my question then is, does it really matter? What we're about to talk about?
Of course it matters.
Okay.
I mean, it matters to you and I and what we do.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even on Breitbart.
See, and that's another issue here. Perhaps that's a one Bravo, or it should be a two Alpha on our discussion list, or maybe even a one Alpha. I don't know. But is the missing of the forest for the trees? We're so busy getting caught up in Donald Trump, what location he tweeted his tweet honoring or recognizing the death of hallowed statesman Congressman Lewis from, where that came from. And then we're so caught up in something that Biden said, the former vice president said 42 years ago, that we're missing the substantive issues of the day. And we're so caught up in this, just, you know, Ellen said, hey, colored people have focused, have had a very difficult time in this country the past half century. Who were focused on, she didn't use the right hashtag. You know, it feels like, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do. I guess, look, I think I was trying to make the argument, at least to the Biden situation in precast, that I don't see it as as consequential as I think maybe you do, but I also understand your, I don't know what sort of adjective or verb I'm looking for right here, but I understand that it, in relation to Trump, I guess maybe it's the whataboutism. If the man had been Republican and said this same thing, based on some things he said about 40 years ago, 50 years ago now probably, you know, would he still have a political career today? And, you know, I'll have to answer that. So I guess we should probably talk about what the hell he said, because no one can find it anywhere. So
that's kind of scary.
So this was what, Thursday?
It was 48 hours ago.
48 hours ago. Yeah, Thursday. Yesterday sought to limit the political damage after he said in an earlier interview that the Latino community in the United States was diverse, unlike the African American community, with notable exceptions.
While speaking to a group of Black American journalists.
Yeah. Where was he? So earlier today, I made some comments about diversity in the African American and Latino communities that I want to clarify. In no way did I mean to suggest the African American community is a monolith, not by identity, not in issues, not at all. And he did this in front of, it was in the article, but it was definitely in front of, where was it? Yeah, it was in front of, like, the African American Journalists society or something like that. Like, Jesus. So, look, here's the thing.
He's going to hold up at a debate.
I absolutely agree that the older you get and the more sort of out of touch when you're surrounded by AIDS and you're surrounded by, well, your posse, if you will, your administration. Like, I think you, was he thinking clear? Probably not. Do I think it's because he has dementia? I doubt it. Like, people want to, at least he said this in full sentences, and his apology was in full sentences. What's that?
Yeah, that he typed.
Doesn't matter. Okay.
He called out a journalist who asked him asked him about a cognitive test, which, okay, I get it. A cognitive test is pretty bizarre standard because you're saying, hey, do you recognize the difference in a refrigerator and an elephant? I get it. It's not really a great metric for who you want having their finger on the nuclear button. But his response to it was equally bizarre of saying, what? Are you a junkie? I mean, you done cocaine before you come in here? I mean, what the hell, Joe? Mm-hmm.
So my question then is, and I think a lot of people would ask this question, is, okay, so we're concerned about a couple things that the guy said on some interviews. Does that mean what? The alternative is we should make a hard pass on Joe Biden and just let Trump have another 4 years? I don't think it's going to be a hard sell.
You want another four years of Axio
interviews? I mean, if you want to talk,
you think Joe Biden's going to do much better? If
Joe Biden would do infinitely better than what Trump did with Jonathan Swan on that Axios really? Interview.
So if they had follow up after follow up after follow up question about the black community, you don't think he would cock that up?
In terms of being able to articulate policy, to articulate response, and to articulate plans, Joe Biden is a better speaker than President Donald Trump.
You still want to wager on those debates?
Wager in what sense? What you're saying is Joe Biden is a less skilled debater than Donald Trump. If Donald Trump wins the debate, it's not on merit of policy. In a classical sense.
Remember what you probably have forgotten or blocked it out or suppressed it all, but I did a formal debate ballot on all three Trump v. Clinton debates, and I ruled all three a double loss.
Sure.
Because neither of them followed the format. Both of them got ad hominem. They were all over the map and didn't follow up on anything, basically, unless prompted.
Yes.
So in a classical format, I'd probably do the same damn thing.
Yes, but here's what you're forgetting. Here's the important piece that you're missing. We've now had 4 years of Trump. We've now had 4 years of a shit show.
We've got a lot larger sample size of Joe Biden.
And we have... Okay. So if for whatever reason, President Donald Trump remembers that Joe Biden said some inherently racist shit in 1970s. You don't think that the former vice president couldn't easily just say, yeah, that was wrong. I guess what I'm saying is, what are we worried about here? What are you worried about? Or what do you think will actually happen? Because it is as if we have this massive undecided, voter block in the middle that's like, God, we just don't know. Like, it just could be a train wreck with Joe Biden. And like, we just don't know what another 4 years of Trump's going to look like. Like, everyone knows what another 4 years of Trump looks like. Everyone knows what 4 years of Biden looks like. It's not going to be any different from Obama, just maybe a bit more progressive. I mean, we have the most predictable next 4 years of a presidency, whether it's Trump or Biden. It isn't
concern.
It's not like it's a Bernie Sanders. It's not like it's a Senator Warren, where we're like, I'm not quite sure what we get here. It is as predictable. The next 4 years are as predictable as with in terms of like political leadership as it can get.
Well, I respect your opinion, but I will say that I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure which Joe Biden we would get, because the idea of Joe Biden calling himself a progressive is the same as, and I've said this before on the podcast, in all fairness, you've been here, you know that, it's as absurd as Mitt Romney in 2012 calling himself severely conservative. It's laughable. It just shows to me, and this isn't a pro-Trump statement, it's not anti-Biden, it's just balls and strikes, okay? It just shows to me that he is truly beholden to the interest that make one question, okay, this is what this comes down to for me and the royal me. Are you okay with lying down and saying what's going on in Portland and Minneapolis? Is that all right? Like the Attorney General said to Chairman Nadler, so if we go down the street here in Washington, D.C., and we firebomb the federal courthouse, is that okay now? Is that all right? Dr. King wouldn't have started, and I'm saying this, A.G. Barr didn't say this, Dr. King wouldn't have started or finished it off that way.
So what are the two Bidens that you think we may get? Okay, and you can make...
No, that's my point.
You can, I mean, it's one or the other, right? There's progressive Biden, or there's Bill Clinton across the aisle Biden, right?
Yeah, but he got shamed for saying that he's proud of having accomplished getting bills done with Strom Thurmond. You know, he had to apologize. You know, he had Trent Lott disease over that whole deal. So what I'm saying is now, so you've got a Joe Biden who's already acknowledged he's a one-term president. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then you follow this up with a campaign issue of, you can't make this up. I sent this to you. I don't know if you saw this via text, but so the Trump campaign has knocked on 1 million doors a week. These are their numbers. And then the Biden campaign's numbers. You know how many doors they've knocked on? Zero. So, and again, the numbers those two campaigns have respectively provided. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, so let me get this straight. You didn't learn anything from Hillary Clinton blaming the fact that she didn't campaign a day in Wisconsin on James Comey. This is not a defense of Donald Trump. You're right. That's a whataboutism. And I've said it before. It is not a defense of your candidate if all you can do is attack somebody else. I get it. But if you're asking me or any other rational voter, any rational centrist, all 13 of us left in the country, do you have confidence in Joe Biden right now? I'm not so sure, man. If we're okay with what's going on in Portland, you know, my sympathy is gone. I made that clear, I think, last episode. Mm-hmm. My sympathy is gone once you've gone past the point. You want to lay down the streets and block traffic, fine. You want to protest at ball games, fine. But we're getting to the point where we're shining lasers and blinding people and we're burning down courthouses. No, you lost me. Because I arrested.
Yeah. So my question then is, do you think, I mean, so what you're saying is we may get the progressive Joe Biden that literally just lets protesters firebomb federal buildings. I guess.
Well, at what point is he going to stand up? At what point has he, give me a reference.
Here's the thing, John. Do you think that, we'll just take firebombing a federal building, for example. Do you think, so we have two paths we can go down. We have a Joe Biden presidency and we have a Trump presidency, which what I believe is that firebombing a federal building, as much as it's not right, is more of a referendum on Trump in the last 4 years, than it is on anything. It's So when I don't think Joe Biden would need to actually stand up and do anything when it happens, when he's elected. I think that stuff largely dies down, especially if you see a Senate takeover by Democrats and a congressional takeover by Democrats. I think you'll largely see that cease, and it will only pick up again if things just don't get done the way they should.
Or if Republicans hold power.
Or if Republicans hold power, quite possibly.
So
it certainly continues if the same framework of the Senate and the executive branch leadership stay the same. Hell yeah, it absolutely continues.
And you don't think a reelected Trump administration will feel unhinged enough, unshackled enough to take harder action by the Insurrection Act?
They could.
The protesters.
You know, you have to see what happens. The day after the election, right? So if Trump does win, I mean,
I want to get this straight. You do not feel that it is acceptable for federal police forces to be used to quell this situation in Portland or Minneapolis?
Do I? I think it's completely reasonable to use federal forces to protect federal buildings. I think that's fine. What I have a problem with is the slippery slope of unmarked cops in cities.
How many federal troops that invaded the United States or the Confederate States were marked? How many of them do you think had name placards?
I mean, it's just to me, it's just as a person that sides with the libertarians on this, largely, even though the libertarians are laughing at the progressives for asking for the libertarians' help, it's still a libertarian type stance on that. I just think it's a slippery slope when you have federal agents coming in time of protest, taking people off the street in unmarked cars, like regardless of the necessity of it, regardless. I just think it's a police state.
How many times have I riffed on the Smith-Mund Act being repealed, on FISA, which we're going to see with the Durham report, just how far the abuses of that have gone, the Patriot Act. I've riffed on this a number of times, okay, as a quasi, somewhat libertarian, but I do find them laughing at progressives hilarious, specifically in the sense that, you know, to discriminate on the basis of race is racism, regardless of whether it's, you know, white, purple, or Martian. So, I mean, you know, the standards are skewed. You know, it's like, what have you read from Immanuel Kant or Friedrich Nietzsche today that justifies your stance on the left? Mm-hmm. Actually, no, my bad. Those two were white. They're not good standards anymore. Or do I exaggerate?
Well, where were we going with this entire conversation?
God only knows. Seriously, but full circle though, that very question that you just asked though is indicative of the Disneyland that has engulfed this whole thing. I mean, the entire construct of this election has gone so far off the rails. We have one candidate whose campaign is knocking on a million doors a week. The other are knocking on none a week, because all of a sudden, the manifesto published by the Obama campaign of 08 that completely rewrote modern electoral politics is now irrelevant because of a virus that even New York is sending their students back to school in the midst of. So, I mean, at some juncture, it gets boiled down to the GOP is willing to send people back to school and back to work because they want to kill minorities. And the Democrats want to keep people at home and because they want to shut down small business and enforce UBI. That's what this is boiled down to.
This is the narrative we've effectively boiled down to.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that's the narrative. Well, the GOP is okay with the fact that there is less social distancing in tightly packed inner city minority communities So they want to send everybody back to school because they want to kill off minorities to lessen the effect of that vote. And the Democrats want to keep everybody at home because the more small businesses shut down, you know, at some point people are just going to crumble and bow to the idea of universal basic income, i.e. socialism. That's where we're at.
Well, yeah, I understand. I mean, anything in terms of super ideological conservatives out there, it's...
I'm not even saying conservatives. You're going to hear leftists saying that about the GOP is what I'm saying.
I understand. They're cold and heartless.
They want black kids to die in inner city schools. They don't care if they send them back and they die.
Well, in Georgia, apparently, it's not even inner city African-American schools. It's good old suburban white schools too, if you look at
everybody.
But anyway, I guess it's equal opportunity to get the economy jump started. But
there's 100% mortality rate amongst humans.
So is that your argument?
No.
There's 100%. You're absolutely right. There's 100% mortality rate, but there's also. There's also mitigation.
There is. I mean, don't drive on the railroad tracks. It's not smart. I mean, the president, in that same Axios interview, you referenced him saying, well, I mean, what was his exact phrasing when he was asked about the risk of reopening? He didn't say his usual phrase of, we'll see what happens.
Oh, my God. This is like the worst thing he could have said is, it is what it is.
It is what it is. That's right. It's like, well, yeah, it is.
Okay. No, if we want to pivot to that, it was a horrific interview for him. Yeah. It was not a good interview because it was the first time especially after Chris Wallace, where you actually just had a reporter sit down and push him. It wasn't like, all right, well, that was a shitty answer. Let's move on to the next one. Or that was incoherent. Let's move on to the next one. Or that was just riddled with, we need to really follow up on that. And the president couldn't handle it. He hasn't had that kind of pressure for 4 years.
The only argument I'll make on his behalf here, and it is per your request, a whataboutism, but versus his opponent, at least he's given them.
That's true, but...
But that's a whataboutism. And again, it comes back to, look, if we fell back to the 1968 dream race that never happened, sadly, Nixon v. RFK, all right, we could both defend our candidates without trying to smear the other one.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the modern political disease.
It's like, can you possibly defend your gentleman, lady, whatever you want to call them,
without smearing somebody else? I think my the counter argument to your whataboutism, or just to address your whataboutism, is that that's all you have from that interview is, oh, at least he's giving interviews. Like, oh my God, that's a horrible comeback that at least he's giving interviews. Like, no, that's...
You want to vote for a presidential candidate that's not?
I already know enough about Joe Biden. I already know what I want to hear from is the chief executive officer of the United States to talk about his plan to address the 150 million or the 150,000 plus people that have died from COVID and the lack of the plan and the hypocrisy going back and forth that the federal government to step in. It's up to the states. The states are doing a shitty job. I mean, there is no response to this. There's no unity within his administration in terms of the experts that are running the show. That I don't need Joe Biden to talk about that. I need the president of the United States to talk about it, and I need answers because right now he is the CEO. I don't need to know what Joe Biden has to say about it. I really don't.
Well, you're not going to find out because his surrogates are going to let you know.
Sure, but I don't need to know about Joe Biden's current plan for coronavirus. I need to know the current president of the United States' plan. Joe Biden said what he needed to say. He said, listen, I'll listen to the experts when I'm president on COVID. That's all I need to hear. Good. At least someone is. Check.
Dr. Fauci just said it was time to go back to school.
Did he? Okay. Then let's go back to school.
Well, so what do you want Trump to do? Say we're not going back?
What do I want Trump to do?
No. You just said you wanted to listen to the experts. No, Fauci just said we can go back to school.
Did he? When did Fauci say that?
Let me find a link here on my, by the way, iPhone, the first time I've ever embraced this device in my long life. Now, there were caveats to it.
Okay. So here's July 24th. Social distancing. here's Fauci on...
He said we need to maintain social distancing.
Cautiously supports sending kids back to school, which I think is great. What I think is great. I think my major problem with the president and his overall response, maybe it isn't as of right now whether or not he's aligning with Fauci or he isn't aligning with Fauci. It's just his overall dreadful response to this entire thing.
That would be a different issue, wouldn't it?
So, my problem up until this point. And why?
I'm just trolling.
No, I get it. That's fine because there's a lot of people out there in America who say the same stuff you do.
No. Don't you dare lump me in there with Alex Jones and
I don't know what Alex Jones is thinking, but there's you just got to go to Facebook, man.
No, dude. Come on. You know I'm more well thought of than that.
I realize that, but it's the similar argument. You're literally making a similar argument, trolling or not. And there's a huge portion of the United States that feels incredibly similar to the way you just articulated that.
Well, okay. First of all, all right, you know what? You want to hear my argument?
Yeah.
The reality is, let's wear masks. Let's socially distance. But children must, where possible, if they're not going to be homeschooled, must go back to school. Private or public, and no state has the right to demand that private schools can't meet. Sorry. Because the workforce must return. Mm-hmm. Well, so who in less fortunate families, i.e. a lot of minority families, if you're a Democrat or progressive, who's taking care of those kids? They must return.
Well, I mean, it's beyond minority communities, man. I'm playing the
left base here.
It's and I'll take it one step further, and I say beyond absolutely those communities were disenfranchised before COVID hit. But we're also talking about
middle class and upper class white kids.
What I will say is the reality of the average working class American who needs both parents to go.
That's my point. That's what I'm getting at, is that they must go back to work. Therefore, I mean, let's be honest, the public education system is a glorified babysitting service.
Mm-hmm.
So it must resume, unless you honestly think we can just keep the economy indefinitely shut down. Okay.
So the question then is, we've talked about this before, then as a group, we need to be willing for the fallout in terms of the mortality related to getting the economy back online. We have to be prepared for footing the bill for some of these, like we'll have an outrageous amount of these $1 million hospital stays from keeping people alive. Or we'll have to move to sort of a utilitarian type of process, a triage type of process, where we just aren't going to save people. And we have to be ready for a massively high death toll. We have to be prepared for that.
The president was correct on something that he said that bizarrely got mocked from the Axios interview, but he was right about, is that there is an extremely low infection and death rate among school-aged children. So what I'm saying is, maintain social distancing, wear masks, and they're going to have to rotate school days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday for one group, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday for the other. Okay, online augmentation where possible above sixth grade. I get a K-5, K-6, whatever. It's difficult to do online schooling there. I'm not being heartless. I'm not saying, hey, it's acceptable losses. This isn't combat. Okay.
But for a lot of people,
I'm not being Jim Jordan here.
But for a lot of people, it does sound like utilitarianism. It sounds like combat. It sounds like, well, you know, kids don't catch it as severely as grandma does. So let's just go pack them into the meat locker that is school and cross our fingers.
So what would you like, Nate, for people not to go back to work, not be able to pay their taxes, not be able to fund all these programs that we love so much?
So again, this just comes back to what I believe is the COVID has identified and shown us a lot of the major issues that are going on in America today. Okay?
Do not try and paint me like I'm okay with kids dying here.
I'm not. Okay. I'm just saying COVID, as I thought you were going to say, paint me like one of your French girls.
Well, I would love to say that, except, you know,
so I'm not painting you as any way. But the way, the perception.
Where is the pragmatism for the economy, Nate? And I'm not being Donald Trump.
Okay, so my question for you is, what happened to 1983 when my mom could stay home and my dad could go to work and make a living comfortably, have three kids by the time they were 30 years old, and she could stay home when she felt like it? You've
made a lot of cases for me.
What's that?
We've got way too. You've made a lot of cases for me with that statement. The overhead is way too high in this country. The taxes are way too high. Okay, the fact that we don't have any sort of safety net for our families. Look, I'm not some kind of center-right freak like it's fashionable to paint me like, all right? As a Nixon Rockefeller Republican, I'm in favor of a social safety net. The fact is, we ought to have.
But what is your social safety net then?
We get nothing for all the, how many hundreds of dollars from the paychecks of working Americans, you and I both. They get taken for what? Social Security, FICA taxes, I think they call it. Mm-hmm, we get nothing for that. Okay? We get the least bang for buck of probably any Western country in the world in terms of health care.
Absolutely.
All right. So I am not at all saying that the status quo is okay. But what I'm getting at is, while we need to improve that social safety net, the idea of keeping the economy, I'm not talking about ball games and concerts, the idea of keeping the economy just indefinitely shut down is a non-starter.
So then my question to you is, what are you willing to, in terms of human sacrifice here to get the economy restarted, what are you okay with then? That's the ultimate question. What are we okay with? What collateral are we okay with? Because we have to be willing for some collateral, like some massive collateral to go back to.
So you don't think there's going to be any new cases if we all stay home?
No, but there's certainly going to be astronomically, exponentially more cases if we just all go back right now. Right. So I'm not saying we shouldn't. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be measured. We shouldn't be thoughtful about going back. I'm just saying we're very much at the point where it's like, look, we could have the federal government step in here and help the average American out for a little while longer and be more thoughtful about this entire thing.
I'm not arguing against that.
Or we just, you know, in true Republican fashion, be willing to sacrifice grandma for the economy and get it back out there.
All right. Well, go back to right after my surgery, which happened on 09 March, the episode we did the week after. That's twice in a row I've done an episode right after surgery. Go back to that episode, okay? And what did I say? I said we need to maintain the stimuli through at least Labor Day. Mm-hmm. Those were my words.
Yep.
Okay, and I'll also say, in the meantime, any of these Illuminati conspiracy theorists, and I mean, they get the hatred from both the left and the right, and definitely the libertarians, but every American, especially police officers and union workers, local municipality workers, ought to be sending the Federal Reserve a thank you note. Mm-hmm. Because all this criticism about them getting involved, what were they supposed to do? Let the municipal bond market crash? I mean, so the reality is, we've got the instrumentalities in place. We have the world's standing reserve currency. Okay. Treasuries will, for the foreseeable future, several generations remain. I mean, there is a path to fiscal sustainability here. okay? I'm not arguing. We just humdrum send people back in. Okay, but I'm saying there's got to be an element of pragmatism here. Okay, but I have said since March that we should maintain social distancing through Labor Day. So I don't want to get painted as some sort of, you know, well, to hell with them.
Yeah. This is going to be, I mean, quite frankly, the back and forth on keeping things shut down versus opening back up. I mean, we can only really speculate as to what will happen if we were to let broadly let kids go back to school.
Well, I can guarantee you what's going to happen to the vast majority of this economy that is sustained by small business if we keep it shut down. Mm-hmm. They're not going to survive.
Yeah, just like if we don't pass some unemployment relief, the eviction rate's going to go up in the next month. So you're going to see mass homelessness across the United States. So, you know, there's a lot of implications to a lot of things here. I think it's, again, the one thing that has been the most illuminating for me in COVID is just to see where we actually are. We've ripped away the Band-Aid. We've ripped away the bandage here in the United States to reveal a lot of things that people knew were true, maybe just in theory. But are actually true, which is...
I'm in there now with Jim Jordan because of pragmatism.
Oh, good old Jim. You're there with Jim. Didn't he know about sexual abuse? Didn't he know it's sexual? Jim Jordan, the same guy that knew about sexual abuse to wrestlers at Ohio State.
No. I'm sorry. The congressman from Ohio. One that doesn't wear a damn blazer.
Yeah, the one that knew about sexual abuse at Ohio State when he was assistant wrestling coach.
You got to put me in there with him, you know, because of pragmatism here. But also, I mean, find another thinker that's capable of articulating a defense of the Federal Reserve here while also arguing for a social safety net. I'll wait.
I respect your opinions on both those. And look, it always warms me inside, John, when you can talk about the Federal Reserve, but also talk about the necessity of a social safety net in the United States. It's like, wow, we need to make more of you. We need to make many more of you outside of the box thinking conservatives maybe pull yourself up by your bootstraps is just not quite the same American dream as it was back in 1980. In 1970, and then there's a new reality in the United States.
It's not the America that Richard Nixon articulated.
No. So, but it's, you know, it's we are a different America. We are, and for better and for worse in some cases. I think, again, I truly believe COVID ripped off the Band-Aid on a lot of cultural issues, a lot of economic issues, a lot of educational issues, etc. And I think what will make America better moving forward is that these things are no longer theory or academic. They are reality. And we can actually move forward and make, from this point, we'll have to have some intense political debate over the entire thing. But I think we will be able to move forward from here once we actually figure this COVID shit out, be able to make America, this place that is greater equal opportunity. And
let me frame this up for my closing argument, since you pointed that out in a very apt manner, and I appreciate it. But my respect for knowledge of the Federal Reserve and the social safety net, while being a Nixon Republican, if I must be so labeled, the way this is sustainable is non-corporate taxes are going to have to go up. The estate tax, the capital gains tax on higher incomes, going to have to go up. We're going to have to privatize, aka sell off, some of the $4 trillion in federal land holdings we have. Okay? Bar none, bottom line, period. Same time, it's also proven to be sustainable and pays recompense into the economy to reinvest in the social safety net on lower income families to create better housing, better job opportunities. There's less policing required. Okay, we can create a whole, we can across the board take a holistic approach here and make an America, you know, as Nixon said in his 1968 nomination acceptance speech, America is not going to be a good place for any of us to live in until it's a great place for all of us to live in. And we can do both. Okay, we can reinvest, save, and rebuild the economy while also caring about, I don't know, the everyday American citizen. I rest my case.
And my friend, I could not agree, dare I say, more with Richard Nixon. But yeah, I agree. 100%.
I don't know how much he defended the Federal Reserve, but, you know.
Well.
He also thought the war on drugs was a good idea at the time, and I'm pretty confident that's something he would rethink today. He'd be like, well, Nate, let me tell you.
That was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just get riddled with phlebitis.
Phlebitis. Diabetes.
I don't know. Yeah. He was easily caricature, wasn't he?
God.
So. They really robbed us. There was no Nixon v. RFK.
Maybe that's good for Nixon.
It's good for us.
It's true. It's true. Well, my friend, we're at 45 minutes. And I got some more schoolwork to do and some other stuff. So, be signing off here. As always, it's an honor and a privilege to do this with you, my friend, week in and week out. And again, thank you to our listeners, both internationally and domestic. We hope that whenever you're listening to this, that you are doing well and staying safe. So until next time, my friend.
Au revoir.